You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
I truly believe at this point that she hopes someone else steps up, that she doesn't want the responsibility. The responsibility cost her everything.
Yeah.
And I do firmly believe that she has no desire to lead.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dagobah Dispatch. This is a safe space for any survivors of Order 66, and apparently there are a lot of you out there, more every single minute, it seems. Speaking of which, we're going to get into all of that with the big flashback scene from this week's episode of The Mandalorian, a flashback that featured the return of a familiar face, although we haven't seen his actual face that much. Misa back! We will get into that. We will also welcome back Bo-Katan herself. Katie Sackhoff is joining us this week, again, to chat about her character, why she kept that mythosaur secret, at first at least, and lots of other good stuff. Plus, some other Star Wars news just dropped. We'll weigh in on some freshly minted Oscar winners joining the franchise. All that coming up right here, right now, on the Dagobah Dispatch. I'm Dalton Ross, joined as always by Devin Kogan and Lauren Morgan. Devin, you attack any giant bird's nest lately out in your parts?
Not lately, but you know, it's the day is still young. We'll see what happens.
I just, before we get going, if you all don't mind, I wanted to read a few things. The first is a sweet tweet. All right, occasionally, listen, we're all pretty busy people here, right? We got things to do. We got articles to write. We got shows to watch. We got podcasts to host. But occasionally you just find yourself just kind of scrolling. You know what I mean? You're just kind of like, you're just kind of scrolling. You're tapping up. You're seeing what's going on out there. You might, some big breaking news you might see, or a hot take. Or you might see something like this, if I could read a sweet tweet to you guys. Not sure if you've seen this one yet. It comes from the account of, let me read it, at Morglore. here's the tweet. This is hot off the Twitter, ladies. 30 minutes to a podcast recording, and my neighbor is hammering the S out of something outside. And ladies and gentlemen, she did not say S. Very salty language, Lauren. Very salty.
I am honestly, outside of this podcast, I am well known for having a potty mouth. And I come from a long line of women who have potty mouths. My mother and my grandmother also cursed like a blue streak, which is really funny when you looked at my grandmother, because she was like this like stereotypical little old Italian lady. You should have been on a jar of pasta sauce, cursed like a blue streak. So I'm just carrying on the tradition of my family. So.
You try that on this podcast. Sammy Junio will edit that right out of the show.
I think I already dropped the F-bomb a few times. And Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I dropped some curse words on my the West of Westeros podcast. So, yeah, you know.
Well, if you want to get a little Dagobah Dispatch after dark, just go to Lauren's Twitter feed, I guess. And that's where you'll find it all going on. It sounds good right now in Bloomfield, New Jersey, outside your
studio. I can hear my neighbor hammering away. I don't know if it's getting picked up on my audio, but I can hear him. So, but you know, hopefully you guys cannot. So,
do you get along with him?
Oh yeah, he's very nice, but he's just
he's nice.
Yeah, he's just an elderly gentleman, and if I tried to explain to him what a podcast was, I think I'd be out there for like about 45 minutes. So I just figured it's not even worth it.
Can you actually do that and record it for us, please?
No,
sorry, Katie Sackhoff, we're gonna have to bump you as this week's guest. We have Lauren's neighbor.
Yeah, he's. I think he'd be kind of confused. So I'm just letting him hammer away at whatever he's doing. So, you know.
All right. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. I also want to mention before we get going here, we got a few reviews. We got a few reviews. Now, we you know, we love it when you guys leave reviews, at least when they're nice reviews, on Apple Podcasts. And if you do, if you're a loyal listener to the show, we would appreciate you doing it. It helps. And we like reading the feedback, sometimes more than others. So let me read you this review. It comes with John Christian Plummer, sent us a review last week. And he said his headline was, "Please be more critical." And he writes, "I love much of Star Wars, but I'm able to be critical about it. How can you call The Convert and most of season 3 of Mando anything but idiotic, simplistic, boring nonsense? We are light years away from Werner Herzog and season 1. I wish you would admit this." So he's not a fan of season 3.
Okay.
Apparently. I thought we were actually kind of critical of the premiere.
I didn't think we were being overly glowing about it. I think, you know, we've been talking about what we liked, but yeah, I didn't really think we were being super positive about it. So
I didn't think so either. But yeah.
And I think noted. If you listen to us over the course of our podcast, we do get quite critical about certain things.
Yeah. John Christian Plummer, we do appreciate the feedback. I will just say this. Any season with this many jetpacks, like, I'm going to be a fan. I'm sorry. I just the jetpacks alone. If people are flying in the air and landing via jetpack, then I'm going to be on board.
Look, Dalton loves a jetpack. He's a simple man.
He loves the jetpack.
Dalton loves a jetpack. Lauren loves a good baby Grogu moment.
Yeah. But Dalton, I don't know, also, what I love, but Dalton hates romance and babies, we've discussed. So
I do.
You know, he does.
Do.
He was complaining about it earlier. So.
I was. I mean, I complain about it every day. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Washington, D.C. I love the Air and Space Museum. And my favorite was, actually, I think this is the one that they built out in Virginia, like the big hangar with the space shuttle.
But
they
the Edvard Hazy Center?
Yeah. They had like a history of the jetpack. And it was just like lots of pictures of dudes in like the 60s kind of like jetpacking around. It was awesome.
And then they realized, this isn't a good idea. We should not put humans on these things.
Yeah. No, they should put more humans on those things. We also got a review from Maul Rat, and that's M-A-U-L.
Rat.
Very clever. Good. Very
we love
clever.
A pun.
That's right. Maul Rat writes, "Great SW talk." I'm going to just assume that stands for Star Wars. It's a fun show because it's like sitting around in your coffee shop chatting with fellow SW fans. Sometimes you agree. Sometimes you think they're way off, especially on the pronunciation of Cap'n Crunch. But that's the fun. Plus, then you get interviews with key players of the universe. I'm sorry. It's spelled Cap'n Crunch. I mean, that's just the way it appears on the box. I don't know what to say. It's literally truth in advertising.
You're outnumbered on this one, buddy. There's a mutiny on the captain's ship.
Well, I've got the captain on my side, so I don't know if the soggies are going to attack us or not, but we'll see what happens. All right, well, thank you for that review, Mole Rat. And everyone else, please leave us a review. Get a shout out. All right, before we get into The Mandalorian, big episode, big return, big interview. We got all that coming up. A little bit of Star Wars news coming out this week. The Daniels, Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert, the two directors of Everything Everywhere All at Once, my favorite movie of 2022.
Yes.
They basically, I guess there's been all this scuttlebutt around a report that they were doing a whole new Star Wars series for Disney Plus. Well, it turns out that's not the case, but Daniel Kwan went on the old IG and posted a story and basically said that they are directing, or they did direct already, one episode of Star Wars Skeleton Crew, which is that new show with Jude Law in it. And he said, LOL, all the people adding us about getting sucked up by the corporate machine can chill. These headlines are always misleading. Don't worry, we aren't working on a whole series. We guest directed one episode. John Watts approached us to do an episode a while ago before EEAAO even came out. We love John, love Star Wars, love learning new tech. We love meeting new cast and crew, and we needed the days to keep our healthcare. So it was an easy yes. Devin, what do you make of the Daniels coming to the galaxy far, far away and doing an episode of Skeleton Crew?
Oh, I'm hyped for this. Like you, Everything Everywhere All at Once was one of my favorite movies last year. I think it was a well-deserved win at the Oscars. And I mean, if there's one thing that they're known for, it's taking weird creative risks and like doing absolutely bonkers things. So I would love to see a little bit of that in the Star Wars universe. I'm never mad when an interesting, like thoughtful filmmaker or storyteller, you know, gets to play in this in this universe. And so I'm thrilled. I'm psyched about this. I was a little surprised that when this news broke, I was like, when did they have time to do this? I mean, I'm curious when, you know, I didn't realize that like they've already got a bunch of episodes of Skeleton Crew in the can. So I'm assuming we might be seeing that on our TV screen sooner rather than later. So I'm very curious about this show. You know, it's a show that, you know, Favreau and Filoni, you know, I think, I don't know if they're like officially producers on it, but they sort of oversaw it a little bit, but mostly it's kind of, this is the brainchild of John Watts and his writing partner. And so I'm kind of curious to see another voice in the Star Wars universe, especially because they've been describing it as sort of an Amblin-esque adventure, you know, focusing on kids. And as we know from our coverage of the Ewok movies, stories about kids can either be very good or very annoying. So yeah. I think we'll have to see what this comes down to. But I'm getting more and more curious and more excited for this show because I think we don't know a lot about it. But I'm also like, okay, there's some good people involved, some good casting, some, you know, I'm super curious to know more about this one.
Lauren, is it piquing your interest now that the Daniels are doing an episode?
Yeah, I just similar to what Devin said, I wasn't aware that they were that far into. I mean, if they were filming this like over a year ago, because that's when the movie came out, I'm like, oh, they were much farther into production than I think I thought that they were. So I think that was the thing. Although it is weird to hear someone say that they were doing Star Wars so they could keep their health care, which I found, you know, very American, but also somewhat sad. I was just like, oh, you're doing Star Wars because of your healthcare. Okay, I guess, but that's an interesting thing for that. But yeah, I'm interested to see what they are. Skeleton Key Crew is it's kind of one of those ones I'm not as interested in it so far as I am like to hear about the Acolyte and things like that. But yeah, hearing their participation makes me a little more curious. It's still kind of one of these wait to see kind of a thing.
Yeah, so. And people shouldn't be expecting to see farting corpses in Skeleton Crew and things like that, that like this team's known for. It's not going to be super zany, weird, wacky. You know, when they've had these directors on The Mandalorian, you can tell that, you know, that you fit into a show's, you know, scope and style. And you're kind of in a weird way, like a hired gun, essentially, to fill in terms of what they're looking for, Devin.
I think Taika Waititi is a perfect example of that on season one of The Mandalorian. You know, he's a very, you know, distinct filmmaker who has a very specific voice and a very specific style. And he brought a little bit of that to The Mandalorian, but mostly it, you know, when you're joining as a television director, you know, like you said, you want to fit into sort of an existing style. You know, and we've seen that a lot on The Mandalorian. We've had some really interesting people come and guest direct. You know, Bryce Dallas Howard is one who I've been consistently impressed with her episodes. Carl Weathers, who directed the episode that we're going to talk about today. I've been really impressed by how, you know, Star Wars has sort of, you know, brought in some really fresh, interesting directors to do some interesting stuff. So I'm very curious to see what the Daniels version of Star Wars looks like.
Oh, you mentioned Carl Weathers. You mentioned the episode that we're talking about this week, and let's get right into it. It is Chapter 20, The Foundling, and it's so funny how we were talking about runtimes of episodes last week and how they can really vary. And last week's was 58 minutes. This one was 32, and that's with the credits.
Yeah.
So this is probably like what, like 25, maybe 26 minutes.
This is one where I think some of last week's episode could have gone on to this week's episode. Like I definitely think that would have been slightly more coherent story of having that them arriving last week.
Could have picked it up right up from the mines of Mandalore, and they leave, and you know, throne gets blown up, and then they go here. So that's not what happened, though. They showed some of that. And this week, basically, I mean, I guess there's two things to get into. And I guess let's talk about the flashback first. And then we'll get into everything else. So Grogu basically has this flashback to Order 66. The Forge gives Grogu this flashback. And basically, a little similar to the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, because they did kind of the exact same moment in time, right? For Reva, where Reva's there in a training session, all of a sudden Jedis are getting blown up and clone troopers are going through, and there's Darth Vader, newly minted Darth Vader, going through the Jedi temple. Same kind of moment in time, only in a different part of the temple, I guess. And Jedis are getting blown up, and all of a sudden Grogu goes in the elevator. Elevator goes up, elevator door opens, and there is Ahmed Best. Yay! That's right. Yeah. Ahmed Best. I feel like we and Emmeline sort of willed this into existence. If you listen back to our podcast a few months ago, we talked all about Jar Jar Binks and how we'd like to see, we talk about the character getting a redemption arc and the character showing up again and the character still out there and why can't the character show up and where will the character show up again? That didn't happen, but at least the actor playing Jar Jar Binks showed up. And this is very interesting because Ahmed was playing a character called Kelleran Beck, yeah. I guess. Kelleran Beck, who is a character we've seen before on a online, an internet game show for kids called Star Wars Jedi Temple Challenge, which aired 2 years ago, I think.
And I've watched every episode of it.
Of course you have.
I love that.
Yeah.
Of course you have. So, but it's even weirder because, so he plays his character Kelleran Beck. He also had a cameo, did Ahmed Best, in Attack of the Clones as another human named Ahmed Beck, obviously a play on Ahmed Best. And Ahmed Beck was in the Outlander Club and sort of just looks very startled when, like, you know, Obi-Wan, I can't remember what happens. Obi-Wan takes out his lightsaber, strikes down the guy who's, you know, about to hit him with the gun. And he's sitting there with Anthony Daniels, who's playing a character named Daniel Faetono or something. I don't know. So it's never really, other than Ahmed Best saying that they're related. There's no official canon saying that, just the actor saying that. But anyway, the point is he plays this Jedi that we've seen before in an online game show for kids. And he basically breaks Grogu out of there. They escape. They go on a, he force pushes people. He's like zapping people with his lightsaber. They go on a big chase. He gets them off world. They go into hyperspace and then it's over. So Devin, what did you make of the return of Ahmed Best and as a Jedi knight?
I loved this. I just had a big smile on my face. This whole scene. What a cool, kind of redemption story for Ahmed Best, who is, by all accounts, just the nicest guy, loves Star Wars so much. And for him to go from playing, arguably the most reviled Star Wars character in the galaxy to playing, the hero who gets to save one of the most beloved characters in the Star Wars galaxy is a really cool moment. And he gets, like, it's a big hero moment, like the way the elevators open and it's this big reveal and he's, doing cool stunts and, defending himself against clone troopers and, speeding around Coruscant.
Has dual colored lightsabers.
Right. Like there's just a,
well, he picks up the slain Jedi. Yeah. Yeah, he picks up the green and he's got the purple.
It's so fun to see someone with dual colored lightsabers.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he gets to do some cool stunts and speed around Coruscant and literally rescue baby Grogu. And it's just a really cool, redemption arc. Sometimes, things like this where it's, can feel a little, kind of shoehorned in where kind of what's happening off screen or it's an actor, but this felt really earned and really like a kind of overdue redemption for him. And it made me happy. I was reading, kind of the social media chatter last night when the episode aired and this, when I woke up this morning. And I mean, everybody's just overjoyed to see him back again. And I think that's a really lovely kind of, thing, because we got to see Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen and Obi-Wan Kenobi, and there was this sort of big groundswell of support, I think specifically for Hayden's performance, because he got a little bit of hate, in the first time around, and to have, he talked about that with us at Star Wars Celebration, what a joy that was to have this sort of homecoming and this sort of, get to hear from all these fans. And so it makes me happy that, Ahmed Best is getting that too, because he deserves his flowers. And we talked about this on the Jar Jar episode, but, the problems with that character are never on his performance. He did exactly what Lucas told him to. And so for him to get another shot and play a really cool character, it's interesting, like you said, that it is like a weird game show character that's kind of coming into canon. But that's the way Star Wars has always been, weird, things that start, in different places and then become canon. So I don't know. I love this. What did you guys make of this whole sequence?
Yeah, Lauren, tell us. You've seen the most of Kelleran Beck.
Yeah. If you haven't watched the show, it's sort of sound cheesy, but it is a really cute show. It's kind of like in the tradition of like a Jedi Double Dare, where they just had groups of like, it was like, I think six kids, and they were in pairs, and they were just doing these like Jedi kind of competitions and things like that. And at the, you know, so it was really cute. There wasn't a second season, but, you know, it debuted during the pandemic. And of course, my daughter was, you know, watching it, and she was rooting for the various kids and stuff. And Ahmed Best was just as the host. He was hosting as a Jedi Master. So it was kind of fun to see, like, you know, to him actually get to see him playing an actual Jedi Master and doing stuff like that and taking that character and actually putting him like sort of in world. So I thought that was kind of delightful, which I did enjoy Jedi Jumble Challenge. And when I saw it this morning, I was like, well, I'm glad I watched that, because now I know, you know, where he came from. So I was really delighted to see. We did sort of have an idea he was coming. So yesterday, when we were talking about this, I was like, I wonder if he's going to be a Jedi. And so I called it. So I'm just glad about that, too.
She did call it. So I had heard rumblings that this might be happening, but like, I thought and just assumed it would be very small.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and like, oh, maybe he'll be like a, you know, exactly like some sort of just real quickly pop in, pop out, maybe a little more than what we saw in Attack of the Clones when he played, I guess, Kelleran's brother or cousin or twin or whatever, but like nothing super significant. Right. And I certainly didn't realize, because I don't know what I'm just assuming, and you should never assume with Star Wars, that we're going to see him again.
Yeah.
Because they go off into hyperspace, and that's, and the story's not over. That backstory is way incomplete. So it doesn't appear to be a one-off. I don't know when we'll see it again. I don't know if it's next week. I don't know if this is going to keep unfurling over this season, or it's something that occasionally we'll see more throughout the seasons of The Mandalorian. But Devin, I think we're getting a little more Ahmed Best.
I'm not mad about it.
Yeah, I really hope we do, because I mean, I said in my little recap was that, you know, we've got decades with Grogu before Din meets up with him. So, you know, there's plenty of material here that they can dig into.
Yeah. And I spent some time with him like a decade ago for a story in EW, and he is a really nice guy, and he really did get the short end of the stick, and he really was a pioneer in terms of the motion capture stuff. And so it is great for him to get this really cool beat and roll and get to come back and just do cool stuff too. I mean, like, he's not just on Star Wars, he's like force pushing and lightsaber wielding.
And like, come on, that's a big moment, you know?
It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Especially when we don't get a lot of Jedi on The Mandalorian, you know, it is kind of cool. This moment that is like full of, you know, we're in the Jedi temple, we're running around Coruscant, we're getting lightsaber action, you know, all of this stuff. So it's really interesting.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because we've talked about this on the podcast before, but like, how many Jedi did survive Order 66 anyway? Like, this is looking worse and worse. And like, at first it was just Obi-Wan, then like, okay, Yoda, like, all right, now we're gonna set up a new show, Ahsoka. All right. Then Luminara gets in there. Yeah. Then we have another new show. So now there's Caleb Dune or Kanan Jarrus, whatever you want to call him. Then there's a new video game. We got Cal Kestis. Then there's some other dark Jedi on Dathomir in that game. Yeah. And then you have like Inquisitors in that game and all these other Inquisitors. And then Reva on Obi-Wan. We got Grogu and now Kelleran Beck. Like, did they kill any Jedi at all? What is happening, Lauren?
Well, they managed to kill a lot of them, but they didn't get quite as many. It seemed like most of the people who survived weren't really near the clone troopers. But I did like to see that Kelleran Beck was really just mowing down the clone troopers right and left. So, you know, I think once some of the ones that got a warning were able to get going, you know. So, but yeah, there are a lot of Jedi who actually survived Order 66 now. So Palpatine didn't do a super great job with that. So, you know.
Yeah, but you wrote about this in your online, Lauren, how like, this is like the most intricate plan. Yeah. Order 66, like, it's been years in the making. Like, they were, you know, put into the clones, like, you know, years ago, implanted. And then he's got to go just the right timing. And I don't know, there's a lot of cracks.
Still misses is some key Jedi too. It's not just like, you know, I mean, you catch a couple of younglings escape and stuff like that, but there are some key Jedis that they missed, like, you know, so that's like.
Yeah, like missing like, Yoda is a pretty. Yeah,
missing
is a pretty
Yoda big, yeah. And Obi-Wan, those are, and also Anakin's Padawan, those are the three big Jedis that you should have sort of made sure you were being taken out of.
On Obi-Wan, at least there was a clone troop squadron there, like, yeah, blasting him. Who had eyes on Yoda? Like, I'm trying to, like, Yoda just shows up at the Emperor's palace. It's like, let's go. Yeah. Right? Like, it's just like, what is that?
You gotta have eyes on Yoda. You had one job. Like, all I wanted was for you to, you know, take out this little green guy.
You couldn't kill this tiny green one. Okay. Yeah. So.
Well, you couldn't kill the other tiny green one, apparently, either.
Yeah. It's like, so, they only got one out of three of the tiny green ones.
They got Yaddle. Yeah. They got Yaddle.
Yeah, they got Yaddle. So.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
So, anything else you guys want to talk about from the flashback? We'll see more. I'm assuming we'll see more. We'll see when we see more, and hopefully we'll see more Ahmed Best. Let's talk about the rest of the story here, where I don't know what's going on. They're doing some like foundling training, and just some giant bird beast like just swoops down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, close enough. I don't know what it was. Steals one of the kids, and then they got to go on a rescue mission. And I guess let's just start big picture. Lauren, what'd you make of this whole rescue mission?
This part of it wasn't my favorite part of the episode. Like, I'm still kind of curious, like, where did all these Mandalorians come from? I thought this, all the Children of Watch got really mowed down. And also, the Children of the Watch just kind of annoy me, because they're such a cult, and then I'm just sort of like, it feels like a lot of this is, okay, we couldn't have Pedro Pascal here the whole time, so we're going to create a cult that doesn't take their helmets off. And now that when you spend a lot of time with them, you're like, this is really dumb. So it still bothers me. And then also when we discovered later on that Paz Vizsla actually had a son, and I'm like, how does that work in terms of sexy time? Like, are you guys just doing this with your helmets on? Like, do you get a dispensation if it's sex? Like, that was like what I like was actually thinking about for most of the episode when they would reveal that this was his son. And also his son was played by Jimmy Kimmel's actual son.
I don't think I knew that.
If you look at the end, it's like Wesley Kimmel. And so you're just like, okay, that's Jimmy Kimmel's actual. So it's like, there was a lot of stuff I was slightly distracted by, but also like, I don't know, like, I'm just, it did sort of like this part of it. And I was like, where are we going? Cause this is like the fourth episode. And I, you know, it feels kind of a little bit like a time waster here.
John Christian Plummer is loving this discussion right now.
He is really loving me, you know, and I was, you know, so I kind of like, it is, was interesting to see that Bo-Katan, they were basically like, you're the leader of this. And I did enjoy her when she was like, how am I supposed to eat when other people are here?
Well, it's
and
not
I'm like,
only,
yes, you know,
it's not only that. And first off, I did write down in my notes, as I was watching the episode, helmet sex with a big question mark. So I wondered the same thing.
Okay,
and then I also
wondered,
not only have I wondered about the eating, but they basically say, this is what they tell her, like, hey, everyone just takes their food. They go to like a corner and they go around the bend and they all eat. So here's my question. What happens when you want to like go back? Like, do you need to give a heads up to like, hey, I'm coming back over here.
No, you
knock, knock.
Yeah.
Is it like when you're like, you're worried that your teenager's in his room with someone and like, you know, maybe doing something, so you make a lot of noise outside the room? Like, how does that work?
You think the watch would just be using something more like a protein shake and something they could just sip up through their helmet? Like, you know, this is just, it gives me a lot of questions. And so I kind of hope next week we get out of this covert, because I'm not a huge fan of the watch stuff. So,
all right, Devin, what about you?
Yeah. Well, first things first, I also had a question that I wrote down in my notes, which is how does Bo-Katan's hair look so sleek after being in a helmet for like 4 days? And then she takes it off and it's like a Pantene commercial where it's like not frizzy at all. I was like, that's insane. That is the most nonsense we've seen
on this run style.
How's her face also just not completely sweaty? Like, you know,
like how are you not just always sweaty in a, in a helmet? But anyway, on a more, you know, on a bigger picture note. Yeah. Like as much as I love the Ahmed Best thing stuff, this was definitely my least favorite episode of the season so far. There's a lot of stuff I liked here, but overall we're halfway through the season. And it feels like it's spinning its wheels a little bit. I think, you know, we got a lot of interesting stuff kind of setting the scene for, you know, everything that happened on Mandalore and, you know, all of the stuff with Bo-Katan rescuing Din. But mostly I'm a little confused as to what sort of Din's overall arc is, because he's very much taken a back seat this season. You know, he had his journey to bathe in the waters of Mandalore. And I thought that was going to be like a season long journey. No, that happened in episode two. I'm very curious sort of where the rest of this season is going to go. You know, Mandalorian's always been kind of interesting because it's not like a true episodic show, and it's not like sometimes you'll have these one-off episodes and then, but you have sort of an overall overarching arc. I'm curious as to where the rest of the season is gonna go, because this whole episode, you know, it felt like, Lauren's gonna get mad at me for saying this, but it felt like an early episode of the Clone Wars, where it's very much
I will agree, the early episodes of the Clone Wars are not that great.
So. Yeah, it just feels like a clunky episode of the Clone Wars, where they're like, okay, we gotta go fight this dragon. And you know, and like there was some cool jetpack stuff. I mean, look, Dalton,
yes, there was.
You love a jetpack. I was a little confused as to how they climbed that giant cliff wearing all that armor. I was like, damn, that must be really heavy. It gave me major Fezzik climbing the cliffs of insanity in Princess Bride vibes, where he's got like four people on his back, but instead they've got like 9 pounds of armor, like a zillion pounds of armor. But yeah, overall, this wasn't my favorite episode. I thought the directing was really great. I think Carl Weathers I'm always happy when he shows up, and there's some great action scenes here. I love the weird design of the giant baby birds, but overall, just not my favorite. And I'm hoping we get a little bit more, you know, kind of plot moving forward, kind of stuff in the next episode. What did you think, Dalton?
Well, we're going to talk to Katie Sackhoff in a little bit, but that interview that Lauren did was before we saw the episode. She's got a lot of great things to say. You're going to want to hear it. But she wasn't able to address stuff from at the end of this episode, which was interesting, because I guess the question I'd pose to you all, which is the big momentum of the episode, the movement of the episode, are two things. I guess Grogu's flashback, although it's looking back. But moving forward, it's Bo-Katan's relationship to the Children of the Watch and the armor and Din. And so she basically, we see her say, this is the way to the armor. I'm like, oh my God, is she buying in? And then she gets the signet. She tells the armor about the mythosaur.
Yeah.
The armor is kind of like, she's kind of like a parent when a kid's like, I saw a leprechaun last night. Like, okay, sure you did. That sounds fun. No, we could see whatever we want in our dreams. Like,
yeah.
And she's kind of doing that, but like Bo's like, no, I saw the mythosaur. So, Lauren, what do you make of that development? And is she like becoming of the Children of the Watch, or why tell her now, and why say this is the way, which is something that she used to only say in jest and mocking Din?
Yeah, that was the very interesting part of my when I talked to Katie last week, because I talked to her Thursday last week, and she had a really interesting perspective on stuff, because I was sort of like, well, why didn't she tell Din about it? And she was telling me that, you know, she couldn't really trust what she was thinking of. And so when she told the armor at the end, and I was like, oh, well, I guess she feels like she's thought about it, and the armor would be, I think, the natural person to tell about it, because, you know, the armor is sort of the leader of the Children of the Watch, and, you know, just trying to get her feelings on this kind of matter. But it was really funny, that discussion between her and the armor, because it seemed like a dinner discussion I was having with my daughter, and I like, what do you mean? Like, that kind of stuff, trying to get like clarity of like, of course, you know, the mythosaur, and like Bo-Katan being like, no, I mean, like, I actually saw a mythosaur, you know? So I'm kind of curious how that would go. And also, you know, I know that the armor knows how, you know, the myths behind that. So you know, are they going to anoint Bo-Katan as a leader? Even though Katee said that at this point, Bo-Katan does not want to be the leader of Mandalore. But as we see in this episode, she's still just naturally a great leader. Like, you know, she has, you know, she tells people what to do. She knows what to do. She knows the strategy behind it and all this sort of stuff. So she is a sort of a natural leader. So it is kind of interesting to see, you know, her trying to like being like, no. But, you know, I'm curious if she's going to get pushed into it anyway.
I think she's going to ultimately, this is just guesswork. I have no intel on this. It's not reporting. I think she's going to eventually embrace it. I think she's keeping it arm's length and they're playing that up. And so I think that they're playing that up because she's eventually going to embrace the
role. And also
and her destiny. Yeah, it's her destiny. This is Star Wars.
Yeah. And also Katee was saying that at this point, you know, Bo-Katan doesn't have anyone. And the fact that the Watch just accepted her so readily, you know, and now she's part of a group of Mandalorians again. Okay, this is a group she didn't agree with particularly, but, you know, it still kind of moved her. So you'll hear more about what Katee says. And it was a really interesting interview, and she had, like, a lot of interesting things to say about where Bo-Katan was, like, mentally at this point, so...
Yeah, and you all ask what I thought about the episode in general. It's interesting because I think you hit on it, Devin, when you said it's we're halfway done with the season. If this were like old school TV where you had 22 to 24 episodes a season, or even if it was like early streaming era TV where you had 13 episodes, I literally am old enough to remember when it was like 13 episodes. Like, that's nothing. What? Right? How can you only do 13 episodes? Now 13 seems like a crazy amount. But when you only have eight, if this had been basically like a 13 episode season, it'd be totally cool with the episode. I love jetpacks. I love the retro flashback and seeing Ahmed Best. I like seeing lightsaber wielding. But when it's... when you're halfway through the season and there's really not a lot of movement in the story at all. That's just the thing that gets me a little.
Yeah. And also we still have that problem was that they burned so much plot in the Book of Boba Fett where that was like really like, it's like these three episodes that really could have just been the arc of an entire season. And they just sort of burned them in Book of Boba Fett. So it is kind of, a little bit like, you guys should have maybe just saved that stuff for down the line, you know? So that's kind of I mean, I'm hoping that the season's going somewhere that, you know, I can't predict, but right now I'm a little bit like, what are we doing? What's going on here? So.
Well, we're going to get to Katee Sackhoff in just a minute. But real quickly, Lauren, I'm behind now on the Bad Batch. I'm a week or two behind. So just give us a real quick, if there's anything important that we need to know from that show, because they are doing a lot of interesting things. If you guys are listening to the podcast, we've been following it because they've been showing this whole transition from clones to stormtroopers. It's really the only place you're really ever seeing it in terms of how that happened and what happened to the clones and the way it went down with, like, you know, in the Senate and everything and all this duplicitous stuff behind the scenes. So any more movement on that stuff or anything else?
This was actually a really interesting Crosshair episode because as we saw, Crosshair had kind of gotten captured. He wound up sort of shooting his Imperial commander. And then he basically got taken to the cloning facility where they're doing all of this experimental cloning work. And in this episode, we find that they have been collecting a lot of other clones, including Hauser, my favorite haircut clone. And there was Echo and Captain Rex and Gregor, who pops up in, later on in Star Wars Rebels. They save Hauser and his other clones from having to go to this cloning facility where Crosshair is at. And there's a character called Dr. Hemlock, who's played by Jimmy Simpson from Westworld. And you can tell there's like a lot of nefarious things going on with the cloning, and they're still trying to find Omega because they know that Omega is the key to getting the Kaminoans to participate in their cloning experiments. And I think this really ties back into what we saw with Dr. Pershing last week on The Mandalorian, where he had been working on various cloning things. So what we're seeing on The Bad Batch is kind of the beginning of that process, that project. And, you know, and then, you know, Dr. Pershing, we see kind of at the end of what happened there. And, you know, this all still seems like it's just mostly, you know, all of this is cloning is a about, you know, Palpatine cloning him, trying to clone himself in the Vat of Snokes and all of that sort of stuff. But I thought it was a really interesting episode. And also that we discover that Crosshair sent a signal out to the Bad Batch as a warning that the Empire is after Omega. So, you know, kind of start seeing a little bit of a redemption arc for Crosshair as well. So it's going to be interesting to see the final two episodes.
You know, I love me some Crosshair. It's interesting the way I like the way that they're hitting the cloning angle in two different time periods on two different shows at the same time with the Mandalorian Bad Batch. I almost wish they'd go further. Devin, do you remember when on I'm calling out Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Let's go.
And they had the big episode that was literally timed to air right after Captain America Winter Soldier came out, where the Hydra sort of was actually secretly running S.H.I.E.L.D. And so they had this episode that totally came out right after the movie came out. It was so well planned to the date. I wish they'd almost do more stuff like that. You know what I mean?
I'm curious as if we'll start to get more of that as the Star Wars universe continues to grow. You know, we've got like a zillion shows in the works, whether we start to get more films, you know, on the big screen. I would love to see more of that kind of like deep dive storytelling. And yeah, it's really interesting to have, you know, Bad Batch and Mandalorian airing at the same time where, again, you know, like Lauren said, we're in different timelines, but these themes of you know, cloning and sort of what things look like after the rise of the Empire and then later the fall of the Empire, sort of the parallels between like the early days of the Empire and the early days of the New Republic is really fascinating. I agree with you. I think they're setting up Palpatine clones and Vats of Snokes, which I'm like, I don't care about.
Yeah, but it's a little
all
bit
of,
hard.
Like the other stuff, I'm like, yeah, I love.
But
this.
The thing is, like when Dr. Pershing was talking about like he said something about like the cast, which he means like the clone strand cast, which that's if people have read like Shadow of the Sith, they know that's where Rey's father comes from. He's one of these cast off clones, so it's like it's kind of like they're all sort of tying that into where Rey emerges from. As much as I dislike this whole plot line, this is they are trying to actually sort of tie this all together in a manner. So it's kind of interesting, like, you know, when Dr. Pershing talked about that last week, I was like, oh, you know, I am curious if we're going to see Rey's dad pop up at some point, you know, in this. So we'll see.
Well, if so, maybe they'll show us something on Jedha, because we know how much Lauren Morgan loves sand on Star Wars and sand planets, especially when lightsabers are on sand planets. So
but
we'll see.
Last week, there was an episode where currently the Bad Batch is on this planet or in this place called Pabu. And people, there was some talk that this place that they're taking refuge on is actually on Scarif. So, you know, so who knows? But
I don't know, guys. I think we need to go back to Tatooine. I think we haven't spent enough time on Tatooine.
Been there enough.
What do you guys think?
We have to check on poor Timothy Oliphant. Like, did he survive?
We do, actually. I want to know what happened to Timothy Oliphant.
What part of him is now bionic? I'd like to know, or a cyborg. I'd like to know these things. Also, I just like to see Timothy Oliphant.
Me
that
too.
That is something we should do at some point, is guess the body part that's been replaced. You know, is it just going to be like Fennec? Is just going to like once raise the shirt up and you just sort of see like a little like robot midsection? Or is it going to be something much more prominent, like, you know, like a robot ear or like arm or something?
I mean, it's Star Wars. We love a robot arm.
I'm betting it's a robot arm, and he's, you know, he was good with a quick draw before, but with a robot arm, maybe he'd be even better. So
He's actually a Skywalker, because as we know, if you lose an arm, you're probably, you know, it runs
in the
family.
Welcome to the family. All right. You all may remember we had Katie Sackhoff on the podcast a few weeks ago, and guess what? It wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. We wanted more. So we put a tracking device on her ship, and she was able to beam in once again to chat about the show. Lauren Morgan spoke to her after last week's episode. It's good stuff. And it's coming up right after this quick break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I'm just going to get right into the episode and talking about chapter 19, because there was some big stuff that happened for Bo-Katan. So after the last episode, she saw the Mythosaur, big thing. And then when we open up in chapter 19, she's kind of keeping that information quiet. So what is she thinking after she's seen this? And then why does she not tell Din about this?
Yeah. You know, I think first and foremost, she doesn't trust necessarily what she saw,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that's one of the reasons why she says to Din, you know, what did you see down there? I think that there is a part of her that is second guessing what she saw. She might have thought that she imagined it. And I think, and even if there is a part of her that thinks that she legitimately saw the Mythosaur,
mm-hmm.
What does that mean? I mean, what does it mean? You know what I, there's so many things that she's trying to process in her head that I don't necessarily think that it's something that she wants to tell anyone about right now. Just trying to figure out her next play, potentially.
Yeah. And with what does she, I know she was like in the last episode, she was very sort of skeptical of all of these like Mandalorian myths and legends and stuff like that. Like what would like actually seeing this legendary thing, like how would that change her? Do you think like, how would that really change the way she's thought about like past Mandalorian things?
I don't know. You know, yeah. I think that for Bo, she thought that this entire thing, everything that her family believed, everything that the people believed, she just thought was metaphor,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think if you see the thing that, you know, your entire culture has, you know,
been the symbol of it. Yeah.
The symbol of your whole culture, you realize that it's, that it is actual and it was literal.
Mm-hmm.
That would shock the crap out of anyone. And you might go tell people, but she doesn't really know Din.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. She doesn't know who she can trust at all. She's lost everyone. So it doesn't surprise me that she's keeping that to herself right now. And because I think if she realizes that everything was real, that I don't know. I think it changes a lot of the things that she's done in life.
Yeah, that's completely understandable. How would you sort of describe how her relationship is with Din right now? Like, because in the past, I've kind of thought, you know, the whole Children of the Watch thing, it always seems like Bo-Katan just thinks this is really silly. And, you know, so she was sort of she's sort of bemused by all of this because she thinks it's silly. But how would you sort of describe what their relationship is right now?
You know, I think that she respects him as a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she is learning to sort of, she's comfortable with him. I think that she realizes that she's actually intrigued by him and mm-hmm. his belief system. But she's also, you know, Bo is pained and she has a history and, you know, she literally says to him, "Where were you? If you were around during this entire thing, during the everything that we fought for, our world mm-hmm. being destroyed, if you were around, where were you? Because you weren't fighting by my side."
Yeah.
So I think that she's just sort of right now, I think that he's an excuse to not be alone. And then when her home gets destroyed and she truly is alone and has nowhere to go, she's got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And no one to go to. She's riding it out, maybe.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out where she needs to go next.
So what is she thinking at that moment? Like, because we saw her, you know, she goes to the Children of the Watch with Din because it's kind of the last place she can, you know, he can sort of take her for refuge. And when the armor is like, well, now you're part, you know, you haven't taken your helmet off, you know, you're not, you know, so you're redeemed. Like, what is, like, is Bo rolling her, like, were you rolling your eyes under that? Or what was Bo thinking? Was she just being like, I guess, like, or was it very much like, what is she thinking of the watch at this point?
Well, I think at this point, like I said, she's intrigued. I think at this point, the fact that she has, they have 100% accepted her as part of this clan.
Mm-hmm.
She's not alone anymore. She was alone sitting and stewing, trying to figure out what her next move was for so long.
Mm-hmm.
To be immediately accepted by people, I think it's new for her. It's new. You know, and she may or may not be trying to figure out if that's a place where she should potentially stay. I think she's, like I said, weighing her options.
Mm-hmm. Does she, do you think at this point, does she want to lead Mandalore again? Or, you know, considering how much experience she's had, even like trying, you know, back with Clone Wars and Rebels and all of these things of being sort of the leader and part of this royal house, like,
yeah,
you know, how does she feel right now? Is she kind of ready for somebody else to take it over? Or does she feel like it's still her responsibility?
No, I truly believe at this point that she hopes someone else steps up, that she doesn't want the responsibility. The responsibility cost her everything.
Yeah.
And I do firmly believe that she has no desire to lead.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
No desire to lead. Trying to lead cost her everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's where she's at. So she's, you know, leading didn't work. So maybe fitting in will.
And yeah, that's kind of a really interesting thing, considering the history of Bo-Katan and how much she has been, and even with like just fighting with her sister or about the direction of Mandalore. So it's really interesting. And I've really liked to see that this season, that, you know, we're seeing a very much, very sort of different side of Bo than we've seen in the past. And has like been playing her in live action, has it changed your perception of the character at all? Like for before, like what you were, or is it just about like the where Bo is in her story?
It absolutely has. I don't think that until I started playing her in live action that I truly understood her pain and her grief. You know, when you put yourself in her shoes, and this is a woman who was very young when we first meet her in Clone Wars, and she has never ever done anything that she didn't think was right for the Mandalorian people. And she followed someone that she shouldn't have, put her trust in someone that she thought she aligned with. And by the time that she realized she was wrong, it cost her sister. And if she did everything she could to potentially stop that, but at that point it was, you know, the machine was already moving. And she lost her sister. That was incredibly painful for her. And I think that everything she's done from that moment has been to try and right that wrong that you can't take back.
Yeah.
So I just think that where we find her this season, she's just incredibly broken and she's given up.
That's really kind of amazing to see it in live action, like, and just to be able to see her journey sort of like that. You know, and now on top of that, like, she's lost her palace and her throne. And I know it was like before, like when we saw her in the first episode, I was like, is she just hanging out in that throne the whole time? Like, is she just
I do believe. Did you see that the TikTok?
Oh, yeah, I did.
It was so brilliant because it's literally what my husband turned to me at one point and said, how long has she been sitting there?
I was joking. I was like, is she like watching the HoloNet when someone's not there? Like,
I loved it. I just think it's one of those things that, you know, and she probably goes about her day in the castle. She probably makes breakfast, gets out of bed, breakfast, and she's bored. So she's like, I might as well go sit in my throne. And she sits there. Maybe she's meditating. Maybe it has great acoustics and she's like singing to herself. We don't know, you know? And then I think, you know, around 5, she probably gets out a real nice like Pinot Noir and enjoys the rain and then goes to bed every day. Like, she's really just living a very simple life. And then he drives up and, you know, she's like, what do I do now?
That's an adventure.
That TikTok. How do I look cool? What do I do? How do I look? Like, it was just, oh my God, it was so amazing.
And so, you know, I thought that was really funny when I saw that as well. I know just I'm going to end this on a later note because we're talking about Bo-Katan's grief and all this sort of stuff. But I saw you were at Galaxy's Edge earlier in the week. Was that your first time?
No, it hadn't. Yeah. I've definitely been to Galaxy's Edge before. I've never built my own lightsaber before.
And oh, yeah.
I have to say that that was so much fun. And I was like a kid in a candy store. And the only I got to keep it, I was like shocked and so excited. I have a little travel carrying case. I brought it home and I got back to the hotel and my husband was like, "Do you have a lightsaber?"
That's great.
Well, yes, I do. I think my child just wants it now. I think she wants to know what's in there.
We were looking at I was at Galaxy's Edge last year and my husband and I were looking at the lightsabers and like the really nice ones. And I was tempted. And then it's like, I know how we have a lot of plastic lightsabers in my house and I know the way they are used. And I'm like, I cannot invest in this thing because it's going to get destroyed.
Like so, as you're leaving, mm-hmm. They in character remind you how breakable your lightsaber is. I think what they're saying is, please don't cosplay too hard with this. You know what I mean? Like, it's quite funny.
Yeah, we let my daughter build one of the plastic lightsabers over by Star Tours at the time because we're like, this will take the damage that we're probably going to inflict on it. So
like, and you legitimately can buy ones that like you can have fights with. They're amazing. Amazing. I may or may not own one.
That's what I figure. Like once my daughter gets out of being school age, then maybe we can consider a nicer lightsaber.
Yeah.
And then my last Galaxy's Edge question, blue or green milk? Are you a blue milk partisan or are you a green milk partisan?
So I didn't actually get to partake.
Oh no.
No, because the park was actually not open yet. Which is the most surreal thing to actually be in Disneyland before the park opens. I have to say it was pretty surreal moment for myself. But green is my favorite color. So I'll always go with green.
I have to say I'm a green milk partisan as well. I tried the blue milk and it was a little bit, it was kind of a strange flavor. So I was much more of a green milk partisan.
With the green.
So, yeah. So
that
you
sounds
have
like
to try it next time.
I would actually like try to feed my child and be like, you know, something healthy.
I let my daughter try it and she's like,
Star Wars.
Yeah, she tried that and she's like, I don't think so. I think she's a chocolate milk partisan. So I think at the end.
Chocolate milk partisan.
Yeah. Katie, it was really nice to talk to you. And I hope we get to see you again, you know, on the podcast.
Oh, have a good one. It was nice to see you.
Thanks to Katie Sackhoff for hanging out with us this week. And thank you for doing the same. We really appreciate it. And we would also appreciate it if you could please follow and rate and review the podcast. And we'll try to read your review and give you a shout out right here on the pod. You can connect with us on social media by following Entertainment Weekly on all socials. It's at EW on Twitter and at Entertainment Weekly everywhere else. You can also tag and follow us directly using at Dalton Ross, at Devin Kogan, and at Morg Lore. Thanks so much, everyone. We'll do it all over again next week.
This episode of Dagobah Dispatch is hosted by Dalton Ross, Devin Kogan, and Lauren Morgan. Produced by Chanel Johnson and Sammy Junio. Edited by Sammy Junio. Full episode transcripts are available at EW.com. Thanks for listening.